He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Mark. And this is Car Keys.
And we are going to, Jay is going to mainly, and I'll pipe in when I can. We're going to talk a little bit during the course of this show. I'm not sure where what segment it'll come into about the state of the American automobile industry, because Jay has a lot of comment about it, and I'm not sure I disagree with a lot of what he's going to say. But I have some elements that maybe he isn't going to bring into play here. So, Jay, let's start off about your thoughts about the car industry from the American manufacturer's point of view, and where they're going or not as we move towards 2020 and beyond.
It's pretty grim, I think.
Yeah, and these are our opinions, folks. The opinions you will hear on this show about this are our opinions.
So, on this show, we've talked about brands and the brands we like, the brands that are in, the brands that are moving up. But there, all these brands are part of a limited number of car manufacturers, and there are about 85 brands worldwide or recognizable brands of cars that are owned by, 14 or 15 car manufacturers. And what really matters is these manufacturers and who they are and how financially sound they are.
Stop right there, because I would have said, as a regular person, not a car guy, I would have said, oh, if you said how many cars are there, brands, I would have said, 15, 20, because of the major manufacturers.
Right. But some of these 84 or 5 brands are not present on the American market. And this...
We're talking worldwide availability.
Yeah, but
the bigger picture is the U.S. market used to be...
King,
and more than half of the world market, and that has significantly changed. Not only are we not over half the market worldwide, and it used to be that the market was a good chunk of it was here in the U.S., and then the other half of it was in Europe, and we're talking the 1950s, 1960s. That picture has considerably changed.
It's called China and India.
And it's called China and India. And in 2010, China became surpassed us as being the biggest auto market in the world, and with around 16, 17 million annual car sales. And China is up to about 28 million sales now, and that number is growing. So our market share, as far as our... Not the production, but from the customer, the sales side, is shrinking. So the U.S. market is less and less what car manufacturers are tailoring their models to. So we have companies like Ford here in the U.S. who are, and whether they truly are or not can be debated, but where we have trucks that are still... a good chunk of the automobile production, pickup trucks particularly, in the rest of the world, that's just absolutely not true. So this big share of trucks may be important on the U.S. market, but again, on the world scene, that is shrinking every year. on the production side of things, China is now also the biggest producer of cars, and outnumbers us, I'm not sure by what kind of numbers, but GM produces a lot of cars in China. And some of the models, I know some Buicks, some Chevys, are and I don't know exactly which models, but are made in China.
And then they come back here?
And they come back here. and it's a very complex network. I mean, we've seen charts of where cars are produced, and it's not just cars. It's, engines,
cars, trucks, bits, pieces.
Engines, transmissions can be
built
in Europe and assembled here in the U.S. and sold in Asia, or the other way around. So it's a very intertwined,
convoluted.
Another quick question about that, just in terms of the intertwined. What qualifies, for example, if a horse is born in Kentucky and then sent someplace? It's a Kentucky. I'm trying to find out what qualifies.
It's very, very hard. It's very hard, and it really depends. I think a lot of times they talk about a percentage of added content, value
in the car.
The window stickers on new cars today have a very vague definition of what percentage of the car that you're looking at
was built in a certain place.
And I was recently at a Volkswagen dealership, to digress from Jay's commentary for a moment, and waiting for my van to get some service. And I went out to the showroom to look at the new Atlas, which I have yet to get my hands on to drive, but it's the largest current Volkswagen vehicle produced. It is similar to the new Subaru, the Subaru Ascent, and the Mazda CX-9 in size, three-row crossover capability. And I'm looking in the back, and there's a little cover for the back floor behind the third-row seat, and I pick it up. And I looked, there was a little tag on this cover, and I look at it, it says, made in China. And, you know, I wouldn't normally sit back and wonder, but, you know, I don't think of Volkswagen as having gone and had bought components in China for the cars. They used to be all German, all European, and then they've came. Now they do what they are, building cars in Mexico and the like. But the engines aren't built in China. Just one component. Now there may have been other components in the car that came from China, but I can't believe that the cost differential for this particular part was so cheap that they couldn't have built it in the U.S. or Mexico or Europe.
Wasn't that part of the intertwining?
It's a moving target all the time, because as we know, the cost of production Chinese goods is increasing. And sometimes, in some cases, for instance, car manufacturers built cars in Mexico, and maybe 10 years ago they started moving production to China, and now some of the production is coming back to Mexico, because producing goods, and this is not only cars, but producing
things.
Good things in Mexico is becoming
cheaper than
having it.
Transportation costs and all that.
Sure,
too.
My late lamented.
It's a lot cheaper to get from Mexico to the U.S. than it is from China.
What do I have? Your four motion? My late lamented four motion that this one replaced was definitely built in South America. And that we knew. So that was 2000. That was 12 years ago.
Volkswagen kept building the Beetle. Way after the Beetle was thought to be dead in Brazil until not very long ago, and
that's
built a gazillion of them in Brazil. And by the way, Volkswagen, with all of its problems here in the U.S. market and all of the criticism it faces here, is the number one car manufacturer in the world.
Right, and despite that indictment, but my question is, with VW, they have, built all over the
built all over where?
All over the world.
Well, there are various versions of them that are built.
I'm not 100% sure, and I may be wrong on a few things here, but I believe the Jetta was built or has been built in Mexico for 10, 15 years now. We know they built cars in Brazil. They have a huge plant in Tennessee where they build
the
Passat. Yeah.
You can safely say it depends.
And take the case of BMW, for instance. BMW manufactures more cars in the U.S.
Right.
than it does in Bavaria.
Right. So they're exporting out back the X5s, I think, and some of the others back to Europe and from here, because they're built here now instead of in Germany.
Right.
Or other places.
So the biggest picture is that we're not getting a very because of the way that trucks and cars are being, shall we say, measured or conflated, you're not getting a proper sense of what's really going on.
Well, I don't know about that so much, but let's go back to this problem of where the American manufacturers are going, which is they're diminishing in strength in marketing and market share and production, all that. And then you have Ford adding to the problem, because several weeks ago, Jim Hackett decided that he's going to kill all cars, not all cars that Ford makes, but most of the, as this headline says, value-destroying non-luxury sedans are goners. They're going to keep the Mustang and the Focus Wagon.
Yeah,
two vehicles. They may recycle, or they may emerge with some other cars. But this is, you know, the reason is trucks are king. And they're profit centers.
But you
He's
also
not thinking
said
about the consumers at once.
At the same time that you mentioned that, which I think caused a great, I mean, not only the, it caused a great deal of confusion in the reporting around that as well. So I don't think there's a civilian out there who really understands what's going on. But the other thing that most people don't know is what qualifies as a car or a truck.
Well, we'll qualify it. The cars that we're talking about are the Fusions, the Tauruses, the four-door sedans that are not SUV platform-based, riding higher off the road, are all-wheel drive necessarily capable of going off of anything but a smooth pavement. It's not – just keep it simple, folks. Don't get confused by this. That's what Ford is calling cars. All the trucks are the Edges, Explorers, and whatever else they've decided to call SUVs or crossovers.
I thought that they were keeping the same platforms and making
the platforms may exist, but the sedan, the bodies are going to go away, and the sedans, as we know them, are going to disappear. And I think it's very short-sighted. And there's an editorial in last week's Automotive News, which is sitting before me on the desk here. And there's a pro and a con, and I haven't read them. And the writers are from Automotive News, and I am certainly on the con side of the bench as far as that goes, as far as I think it's a mistake.
And you've had a sedan for many years, right?
And General Motors is also going – Jay's got a comment about General Motors. He said General Motors and Ford are really the ones that we really have to watch because they're going to sink.
Well, they're no longer the leaders in the field, that's for sure. General Motors is the fourth largest manufacturer in the world. Ford is fifth. Hyundai is past both Ford and GM. But GM is working, you know, now we get back to what really matters on the world scene, and we're back to electric vehicles and fuel-efficient vehicles, which is still important in most of the world. And electric vehicles, and we get back to that, are coming.
Scandinavia is way ahead of us with the electric vehicle usage.
Yes. A lot of countries still have tax advantages for electric vehicles, and that's a huge part in how
they're making sales and getting people to buy them.
And for instance, I was riding with somebody yesterday who lives in Hong Kong, and I asked him, "Hey, do you see any Teslas in Hong Kong?" He says, "Interesting, you ask." He says, "The Tesla is the country in the world. Well, Hong Kong is not a country. Hong Kong is a place in the world that has the most Teslas per capita. But the reason for that, and that will be changing soon, is that luxury cars have a first registration tax that equates to about 100% of the value of the vehicle. And that tax has been waived on electric vehicles up and until now."
Which reminds me that decades ago, remember the luxury tax? Suddenly, cars above, what was it then?
$30,000.
Oh, because I was underneath just with my Volvo wagon, something else that's been, you know, canceled for lack of interest way back when. But is that still in play? Is there a luxury tax still in play here?
You know what? Kind of weird you mention it because I don't.
Actually, I think there may well be a luxury tax of some sort.
But it's not $30,000 since that's now considered the base price.
Which is appropriate. I mean, but, you know, the other thing about electric cars in the smaller countries is that smaller countries are not very large mileage-wise as far as traversing and driving time in a daytime.
Here we go with the range thing again.
That's right. We're going to go to the range thing again. And then you're going to see more electric cars per capita in these countries than you will in the U.S. for quite a while, I think, just because of the size of the U.S. and what we are. We're 50 states worth of mileage.
But that's an important point because what a lot of people don't realize is that you can resettle pretty much entire countries in North Dakota. And it's one of the I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying from a I'm just saying from a size perspective going back historically, and I'm talking about 150 years and I'm not talking about cars, but that was always the thing about America. It's big.
Okay, let's reset the the clock here.
Okay.
The range on the electric vehicles right now is in the 220, 250 range.
To 300. For the luxury ones, it's higher.
Within, within 3 years, we will have a bunch of cars on the market with 300-mile ranges.
Okay.
Okay.
And I had asked Robin last week, and just before you, because 300 miles, if you go back and forth from Sharon, Connecticut to New York City, it's about 103 miles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so twice it's 206.
Six. Correct. So you can do that in a Bolt.
I'm talking about, and I'm sorry because I don't have my B's and my V's, so I'm talking all electric right now.
Yes.
But when you get caught in, as we were the other day, just one of these massive, thank you very much for doing the potholes now,
traffic jams.
What does anyone have to worry? I happen to be one of those people that.
Well, I don't know how much being stuck in a traffic jam, let's say an hour, is going to do to electric range while you're
AC
there. If you're in, it happens to be 100, or yesterday it was 106 degrees in Arizona. Now, I don't think there are traffic jams there, but if you're in an electric vehicle, and
does
let's say
matter?
You already put 100, well, it will if you've got air conditioning
that's
running,
what
and
I'm
that's
asking.
What you're going to do, but I don't know how much it's going to matter. I do not know the answer.
Okay,
because
that's what I was curious about.
I don't think it's going to matter more than than we see people running out of gas.
No, but right now, I don't think the general public knows how to measure the usage of electricity like they can do if they look at their gas gauge religiously
and
figure that out.
People, you always have to divide people into two categories, those that drive with their gas light on and those who don't.
I'll give you an example.
No, I'm going to give you an example. Okay. When you drive an electric car, whether a Tesla or Chevy Bolt, you have all sorts of graphs that tell you how far you can go with at any one time.
Okay, so let's say I want to be in New York City and I've got enough to get to Hartsdale. What do I do? That's what I'm trying to say. I understand you've got graphs. I understand you've got all of this. What I'm asking is...
You're faced with the same problem as if you leave New York City with an eighth of a tank of gas and try to come back. You're also going to run out of gas.
And
it almost happened to me the other day, and I was approaching the GW coming from New Jersey, and I was desperately in need of a gas station.
Right. And fortunately, you were in Jersey where you can find one. But my question is this.
Well,
to find out is, can I get an electric charge? What do I do?
You look for public charging places, and quite frankly, I don't know really because I haven't been all that interested because I don't drive an electric car yet.
Okay, so
tell you that on a hybrid car, let's go to a hybrid car. I was in the Canadian border going into Vermont a few weeks back after a ski trip up there, and the border I happened to pick at happened to be under construction. There were you couldn't see the border gates and the straightaway coming in because there's a big sweeping curve. So I said, "Oh boy, I'm not." And the road down to the border had been noticeably absent of lots of traffic heading towards the border.
So you were just
so I was going to go right through in no time. And meanwhile, I was trying to get back into the U.S. This is a perfect example to U.S. gas stations. I had put 20 Canadian dollars worth of gas in to get to the border and into the U.S. So I got around the corner and I found myself in a line of traffic way deep, and I was there for 2 hours. So my hybrid, which swings back and forth between gas and electric,
but at least it
swings, was off a lot. It would idle for a couple of minutes and then go off for 10 minutes or something like that. So I didn't use a lot of gas, but
right.
I had the gas I had in there was extended because of the hybrid.
So
part of the thing. So I didn't worry about getting to the gas station in the U.S.
And
once I got
And my point
through.
Is, doesn't that, just for worry-free, you know, isn't that a huge argument for hybrid?
Yes. I'm still a hybrid person, and until we get fast recharging stations so that you can effectively charge a electric vehicle up in about the same time that you do getting gas and getting some coffee and a rest stop. Hybrids certainly hold my vote over pure electric
anxiety.
For people who are driving long distances, traveling on interstates and that kind of thing, and want to do it sort of worry-free.
All right. And what did you want to say?
I'm not a big hybrid fan. I drive one on a regular basis, and I find the hybrid is useful, or plug-in hybrid specifically, is useful if you drive locally because you get your few miles a day of electric range, and that's it. But once you get on the highway and you do 50 miles, you're out of electric power anyway.
What about, I hate to say this, but what about a petrol? What about a gasoline hybrid? I mean, I know it's bad, like plastic bags.
No, but also, I'll just say this. I'm going to switch topics very quickly and say, what cars get better mileage than gas hybrid? Diesels.
Right.
And we're back to, brings me back. So on a little side note, about a week or two ago, I saw an ad on Facebook for VW certified pre-owned diesels. And I go, oh, that's interesting. Volkswagen's coming back, you know, remarketing their diesels. So this morning before coming here, I went on Auto Trader and did a search on Volkswagen certified pre-owned diesels. Everything, all of them. And there are about 700 of them listed
With more nationwide. Online. Probably every month.
Probably every day more coming out. So Volkswagen is remarketing all those diesels that were taken off the market. Not all of them, but a good part of them. 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16s, Jettas, Golfs, the big ones, the Touaregs. They're
coming back.
Oh, they're all there.
And I want to jump in and say apparently the fix is working because according to a service advisor at the VW dealership I was at couple of weeks ago, he is very satisfied, and he is the owner of a reconditioned Volkswagen diesel 2012, I think it is, and he says that the power is there and the mileage is there, and he absolutely loves it.
And I will just
he got a very good buy on it, which is
helps tremendously,
which will help a lot.
And I will just go on to say that one of the apropos charging or petrol or hunts we once had was trying to find. The diesel, the light was on, and we needed to buy diesel. And suddenly,
you got worried.
Well, there was definitely.
I had that occasion in Vermont a few years back, and I was down where the light was on, the reserve light was on, and I was heading for a tiny little town in Vermont for diesel fuel, and we actually ran into one diesel place that didn't have diesel. But I made it.
Yeah.
But I was concerned.
But
600 miles with a tank.
Yes, I've gone 600 miles and was waiting to get the diesel.
May I just say, you loved that car.
I love mine.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Wind it up, Jay.
Okay. I love that bar. I love that car. Wind it up, Robin.
Well, the Volvo V60 Cross Country T6 all-wheel drive ocean race version is on the market for lucky Volvo people who would like to buy a really nifty version of the Volvo Cross Country wagon. And my advice is do it the European way by taking the tourist edition and buying it in Europe. It costs roughly $13,000 less than buying it at your dealership here in the U.S. Plus, you get a trip to Europe. You get insurance to drive for 2 weeks. You get it shipped back to the U.S., and you have a good vacation to boot, and you get to see your car right after it's come off the assembly line, ready to be delivered to you.
So, Jill, Robin is telling you that he's going to be gone for a week or two.
No problem, because as the late lamented William K. Rashbaum, he took his kid on a bicycle tour of Europe, and they picked up the car and had an even better time. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMark, and this is Car Keys.